Welcome to Gawler Broadcasting Association's Reading and Writing Podcast about books and the authors who write them. Find out not only about their latest book, but also what they write, why they write, and how they work with others so we can read them. Have you ever had the idea that you too wanted to write a book? Find out how it was done by others in candid conversations about what, why, and how they nurtured their books. This episode's interviewer is Jerry Donaldson. So welcome to the Reading and Writing Podcast, where we talk about authors and their books. And today we're talking to author, blogger, photographer, editor and copywriter, Marion Halliday. This is the first in a three-part series where we talk about her latest book, Hammy and the Moken's Magic Potion, a children's fantasy book set in the Thai Islands. Further episodes, we'll talk about the craft of writing. Hopefully then we'll move on to writing collaboratively as the book is co-authored by Peter Stain. So let's get into it. So welcome, Marion. And can you tell us a little bit about, firstly, your journey, just a snippet, as before we move into talking about your latest book.
Hi, everyone, and thanks for having me on the podcast and for that warm welcome, Jerry. Yeah, I've been writing all my life one way or another. At school, composition was my favourite subject, and I think my teachers were a little bit concerned that I was able to write many, many pages instead of just the mandatory half page. And I always tried to turn my history essays into a story as well. Then I trained as a teacher. I worked in the corporate world, and I wrote a lot of the fun stuff like reports, briefings, policy, procedures, manuals, so on and so forth, ministerial correspondence, and a whole lot of other things that, yeah, they sound really dull, but I made them interesting. And I used to actually win awards for my communication skills and writing when I was working in that corporate environment.
It's always nice to be recognised.
It is nice to be recognised, and especially for dull subjects. People used to say, you've made this really interesting. And so I knew then that people would actually read what I wrote. And so you get your fun and your learning at the same time. And that was an important lesson that I've carried forward into future work.
Was that feedback then something that says, maybe I can write a book one day?
I was always a little bit thingy about writing a book one day because it seemed like a big ask. I certainly knew that I was going to be writing some things because people would give me feedback outside of that environment as well about back in the days of, dare I say, writing letters. I wrote good letters as well. People would always be saying, you should write a book. Yeah, I guess it wasn't until much later that I actually thought maybe I could do it.
There are many different genres of writing. So you talked about procedural writing, like manual writing, all of that, which are very technical types of writing. So how do you take that step then from writing technical information about legislation or policy and lots of different things and write a book about a gecko in the middle of a Thai island? I mean, it's a big distance. And that's what we were talking about. We're talking about... Yes. Your latest book. So tell us
an interesting way of putting it, and I hadn't really thought of it like that before. But I guess the main thing for me was that I was writing creatively outside that corporate environment. As I said, with letters, I've been told I give good postcard. Which is a skill not everyone had, apparently.
No. I've always wish had, you were here having fun.
Yeah. I had what people refer to as a way with words. People say, oh, I got your postcard.
Do they mean
just
that
laughed.
You talk too much?
You'd have to ask them that. I don't think I've ever been accused of talking too much. And if you believe that, I have a bridge to sell you.
Right.
But yes, communicating and making people laugh was something that was important to me in both the corporate environment and my personal life as well. Yes, I didn't make a jump, if you like, from writing the dull stuff or the technical stuff, as you so kindly put it. I didn't make that leap because I was already doing the creative things in my personal life. Not in a very formal way. I wasn't working on a secret novel or anything like that. I was just able to put words together in such a way that people looked forward to getting my letters or postcards or whatever. And of course, that was in the days, dark times of no internet. And so
you actually had to use a pen.
Yes, actually writing. I did learn in my work environment to touch type. So now I can type as fast as I can think, which is, again, has been invaluable because I don't have to take a pen to paper. In fact, I think the last time I picked up my pen to actually sign something, I had to practice practice a few times because I just don't write very much on pen to paper anymore. Sorry, I digress.
That's fine. We were talking about all the way from technical to children's books.
Okay, I guess the next step for me, once I left the corporate environment, I needed an outlet for my creativity after all those years of writing fun technical manuals and ministerial correspondence and the like. It was around that time that one of my friends actually inspired me to write a blog and put all my experiences about traveling in Australia, which I'd been doing all this time outside of work.
And you're called Red Nomad Oz.
Yes, my name for my blog and my subsequent online life is Red Nomad Oz. At the time, grey nomads were becoming a thing in Australia. I thought, I'm too young to be a grey nomad. One of my friends said, well, you can't be a grey nomad, be a red nomad, because unsurprisingly, that's due to the colour of my hair, for those who can't see me as we're talking on the radio. And so I became Red Nomad. When I went to start my blog, though, there was a suggestion. I read a lot of things about setting up a blog and how to go about doing that and so on, like the technical side of it. And somebody said on one of the how-to manuals, you need to check and see if your name is being used already by something that's copyrighted or something that where that might be a problem if you have the same name. So I looked up Red Nomad and there were like quite a few Red Nomads who had blogs already, but there was also a company called Red Nomad, some IT company, I think. So I thought, well, I'm going to be really creative and change my name slightly from that. So it's not the same thing. So I added the Oz for Australia, OZ, at the end. Yes, I became Red Nomad Oz and I started a blog about Red Nomad Oz's adventures in Australia. I think it was the right timing for both me and Blogland to start that. There were other blogs out there, not anywhere near so many as there are now, because this would have been back about 15 years ago. There weren't that many that really were telling the real story about how to travel in Australia. These days, blogs are full of listicles of 10 exciting things to do in Melbourne. I was writing more about, here's the experiences I had in this place, or here's some reasons why you might want to consider this place that might not have been on your itinerary before, because I was looking at more places outside of the main tourist hotspots.
And they give you an experience of photography as a tool as well while you're out there. So it wasn't just writing, it was actually taking photographs of places. And something we'll talk about in another episode, that led you to being asked to publish a book.
That's correct. Back then I had a film camera. And so to get my photos onto my blog was a little bit more difficult than it is these days, because I had to get the photos printed and then I had to scan them, and only then could I use them on my blog. So it was a little bit of a tedious process. One of the things that I made, and yes, we will talk about this in another episode, that I made a feature on my blog was a series about Australia's scenic public toilets, because I came across quite a few that were set in scenic locations and so on. And that series, I think I ended up with about 30 of these on my blog. And then I got this email out of the blue from a woman who claimed to be from the Hardy Grant publishing house, sort of saying, was I interested in publishing a book about the scenic public toilets? And I thought she meant, was I interested in participating as a contributor? Yes, for someone else would coordinate it and I'd contribute a few toilets. No, she said, it's for you. You've got the blog with all the toilets on it, so are you interested in publishing a book? So yeah, that's the short version.
So that was a great validation, wasn't it, about your words and your images were both resonating with people who thought the world wanted to see them, not only in your blog, but
yes,
in hard copies.
And I think starting the blog was a way to really develop the creative writing side of what I was doing.
So in doing that, did that lead you to the executive editor
of Globe Rovers magazine?
Is that the thing that probably then you had this out, you had the blog side, and you ended up writing for and then becoming an editor with Globe Rovers magazine?
Yes, that was a direct link. Once I'd written the book, again, I got another email out of the blue from the editor of Globe Rovers magazine saying, oh, we're looking for people who've written books that have some kind of travel connection, and we review those books in our magazine, and are you interested in your book being featured? Oh, let me think about that. that for, oh, yes. Yeah, it was kind of that simple. And so from doing that, I spoke some more to the editor about whether he was interested in having more articles about Australian destinations, because the magazine hadn't focused hardly at all. I don't think there were any other Australian articles in there at that point, and the magazine had been going for a few years. So yeah, I was invited to contribute some more articles, and so that led to a partnership with Globe Rovers magazine, where I started proofreading and then editing.
And that leads us all the way to Peter Stain, Thailand, which then talks about the book, and that's your co-author with the
Yes.
Heavy Book.
Peter Stain is the editor of Globe Rovers magazine, and we started working together on the magazine, as we've outlined. The next step was we started chatting more, because it's really different working with someone who lives in a different country. I've never met Peter Stain face to face. He could pass me on the street and I wouldn't know it was him.
And once again, that's another episode, collaborating Yes. with someone who you have never even met.
Yeah, I guess because you're not talking face to face, having those non-verbals in your communication, you have to get really good at communicating. So most of our communication, we have spoken on the phone and had video calls and so on, but that's much less common than just chatting on Messenger or another platform where you can chat, or via email or whatever. And so you have to become really good at doing that, so the other person knows exactly what you're talking about and exactly what you mean. And sometimes it is easier to just pick up the phone and have a quick call about something, but other times, because you're living in two different time zones as well.
And we all know that, living in Australia.
Yes. Oh, we do indeed, don't we? You know, I'd be able then to leave a message. I might start work early in the morning, and then I'd leave a message for Peter when he got up 3 or 4 hours later, depending on the time of the year. That meant that we could work at our own pace without having to be in an office environment where you're right there all the time at the same time every day. We're not in that situation. So I guess it was quite a modern working relationship. But because we got so good at communicating in that context, became friends enough, so we would chat about holidays and where we were going and so on, and that's where the story of Hammy was born.
Okay, so tell us a little about the idea of writing about Hammy in the first place. So how did this sudden spark come about and say, oh, this would be a good children's story?
Well, Peter had said quite frequently in the time that I'd known him up until then, which had been, by the time we started writing the first Hammy, it had been a couple of years. He'd always said that he wanted to write a children's book, just never had. And that was never said in the context of let's do it or anything like that. But it was just an interesting little snippet that I obviously filed away somewhere. He was traveling in the Thai Islands, and he'd sent me some photos of an island that he was visiting that was...
It's a virtual postcard.
Yes, photos and a bit of text, if you like, in our messenger chat of here's where I am and this is what it looks like. It just happened to be his birthday. He'd sent some photos of what he did on his birthday. I looked at it and I thought, oh, that's interesting. It sounds like a story of a few adventures. And so just as a kind of virtual birthday present, I wrote what was the first page of a first draft of the Hammy story. I didn't know that's what it was going to be when I wrote it, but it was kind of like, oh, you know, this is what it could look like. I sent that to him and he was just, oh, a kid's book. And then he made a few changes and added a few things himself to that first little snippet. And suddenly it was like, we could do this. We could write a book about this. We has enough information here to turn it actually into a story. So we did.
And that came out with Hammy's first book. And that was about 4 years ago?
That was 2022 when first Hammy book came out. It's taken us that long to get the second one.
Now, you've sort of changed the format. It was mostly a written book with some pictures in it, where it's very much now a well-illustrated book, and the story has expanded. Tell me how you did that in terms of shorter version that was published, and now the published 2025, and the transition from Hammy then to this book now.
So yes, I'll refer to them as Hammy 1 and Hammy 2 just for ease of titles. Hammy 1 was purely based on Peter's experiences in the island where he spent his birthday. And in the book, if you read the first book, it's about Hammy celebrating his birthday and some of the adventures that he had. So the places Hammy visited in book 1 were real places. They actually exist. So we turned 3 of the adventures that Peter had into 3 challenges. Didn't really know what we were doing. We were just writing for fun. It was just like, let's see where we can take this. And so the book was more of an evolution. I'd write a bit and then Peter would add things in and he would write some more and I would critique and edit. And then finally, almost by accident, no, not quite, but nearly, we got to the end of the book and thought, yeah, actually, this works. Now, Peter has a friend, Choi Chiho, who was the illustrator for the first book. He had some really good ideas about what the characters looked like and that brought the book to life. But that was, as you said, not quite the main focus of the book. It was just like, oh, we need some pictures because it's a kid's book. It was a very haphazard process, I guess, for the first book because we didn't have an age group in mind. It was just like, well, let's write it and then we'll make it fit. And so that one was for a bit of a younger age group because it's a quite simple story. So that one's probably more like 6 to 9, depending on the child, of course, because kids have different reading abilities at different ages that deviate quite a lot from the middle of the range. Is kids from anywhere, really, from 5 to 11, maybe. We'd been thinking while we were writing book one about what the sequel might look like.
So you were planning a sequel even back then?
Well, towards the end of the book, yes, because it was kind of like, oh, we could go on to other islands or other places, because I think in the meantime, Peter had been elsewhere and said, oh, we could set the next book here. It was really a bit of a joke in the sense that we seriously thinking, let's make a series of kids' books. As the idea took hold, we started to consider plot lines and new characters and different adventures that Hammy might have in book two. This time we decided to be a bit more organised, and so Peter developed an outline of book two. And then as we started working on that, it became really clear that the difference in target age group between Hammy 1 and Hammy 2 was significant. It wasn't just the kids who were 5 when they read Hammy 1 would now be 7 or 8 when they read Hammy 2, and it was too much of a leap. So we decided to rework Hammy 1 and include it in Hammy 2 at the beginning, but the whole thing being pitched at a higher age group because it was a bit more of a complex plot line. And
so without giving us too much information about what Hammy does while he's in this grand adventure.
Well, it is, as you say, an adventure story about a young boy who goes camping on a remote Thai island. When he gets there, he finds that the island is part of a gecko kingdom.
So there's lots of animals in it as well. So
yes.
The line in which in the wardrobe, animals who participate in society just the same as people do.
Yes, that's the case. And so it's kind of like a little bit of a parallel universe. He's living in a real place that really exists, but the animals there can talk. So yes, the analogy of Lion, Witch and Wardrobe is very apt. It's similar to that in that respect. So in the Gecko Kingdom, there's some evil lizards who are plotting to take over.
Those scaly things.
Yes, those very scaly things. And one of the reasons they're planning to take over is because the gecko princess is missing. And that's the crux of Hammy 1, which then leads into Hammy 2. That's the crux of the plot, is Hammy helps them find the lost princess. On the way, he makes friends with a group of animals, several talking animals, Goggles the monkey, Lecky the leech, Sally the snake, Billy the hornbill, and then leading into book two, which is the second part of the whole book that's now being published as Hammy and the Moken's Magic Potion. The king and queen then become ill, and the only thing that they think can save them without really knowing is a magic potion, so they have to go on a quest to find the magic potion. So that's the shortened version, with a quest being complex.
So Hammy has to participate in the quest.
Yes, Hammy and his friends collectively join in on this quest. There's no clear leader, I guess, except for maybe Hammy and the princess working together.
So it talks about cooperation between individual people.
Oh, yes.
Or individuals who have different skill levels.
Oh, definitely. Some of the characters, as you can imagine, you'd think, well, how could a leech be of any assistance on a quest to find a magic potion?
They could be sneaky, those leeches.
A little too sneaky sometimes. But again, Lecky the leech was a character that the real Peter met on the island.
Well, he met a leech.
He met a leech in the shower, and that was written into the book as how he met Lecky the leech. And so it does weave some reality, or the fantasy is woven around some threads of reality. You know, as they go across the sea, visiting different islands and having new adventures, there's a few different characters that help them on their quest. And then they have a contact back at home and they find out that the king and queen are getting worse and the lizards are sort of waiting for something to happen so they can take over. And so there is a sense of urgency that they must find this magic potion and hope that it works. There's no guarantees that it works because because it's based on a legend. And so the rest of the book is how they go about searching for the potion and so the effects of that.
So some of the main themes are working collaboratively as a group to do that, and then having some faith in the achievements at the end will have the outcome that you actually want.
Yes, they have a common goal that they're working towards, which is to save their island home, really.
And why do they need to save it?
The lizards in the book a very cunning and kind of a selfish way of ruling they would have that didn't take the needs of the other animals on the island into account. They were more looking how to make themselves richer and so on, rather than let's help the rest of the island, whereas the gecko rulers are completely opposite to that, working always for the good of the islands. The animals can see what will happen if the lizards take over. One of the things that we touch on is, just for example, is the lizards would want to sell some of the animals to zoos to make money. And so because Hammy's become friends with these creatures that he actually talks to, he can't imagine their life in another country in a zoo. One of the other things we touch on is the issue that many island nations face is that's garbage washing up from the sea. And in our book, the lizards would not care about that. In the gecko kingdom, that is an important task that they do to maintain the purity of their island home.
So there are themes that are actually going through.
Oh, there's definitely environmental
working
themes.
Working together.
Looking after the places that we live.
And to protect the animals use it.
That is one thing quite important to both Peter and I. And the focus of Globe Rovers magazine is on, here's our beautiful planet, let's keep it that way. That is certainly one of several key themes in the book. Coming back to what you were saying before about teamwork and working collaboratively, that is a very important part of it as well. And also valuing the contribution that every member of that team can make. And they all listen to each other as to how to go about the next step.
Lucky the...
the leech, yeah.
Can't fly, but obviously the hornbill can fly.
And the hornbill is actually part of what we refer to in the book as the Hornbill News Network, or the HNN. And so they keep people informed about what's going on, people and animals. We refer to the animals in the same way as people, because to us the characters are more people than animals, because they can talk and they have thoughts and feelings like humans do. So we don't differentiate between, oh, this is a human and this is an animal. It's just, here's a group of friends who work together. So yes, the quest is all about finding the potion, but it's also about learning some lessons about how the world operates and how the natural environment needs to be protected, and the dangers of not doing that, which they see a couple of times.
But there is a journey, so it's a hero's journey type of book for all of the animals, as they do. And of course, we're not going to give away the ending because you want everybody to actually buy the book. Do you think there's more in the story as the world changes?
One of the things we thought the book is to achieve is to start a conversation with kids at a very young age about environmental messages and themes, and also ideas like teamwork and collaboration, because our belief is you can't start that too soon. We've tried very hard and in not making that too preachy, so the book isn't ramming it down your throat that this is what you should be doing. It shows rather than tells what people need to know about the dangers to the environment.
You have a story which you could follow of an adventure that happens to Hammy and his friends, but it also has the underlying message of how we work together in the world to make
sure
that...
Yes, it's an integral part of that story, the messages that we believe, which children can't help but pick that up when they read the book or have the book read to them.
So is this the last of Hammy?
Well, you'll have to watch this space. Hammy, finishing this book was a much bigger task than finishing the first book.
About twice as long, isn't it?
It's much longer and more involved. So Peter and myself will have to wait and see whether we decide to proceed with Hammy 3. There's certainly no plan right at this moment to do that. Who knows what the future holds?
Okay, so where can we get the book?
The book's available on Amazon. Listeners can go to their local Amazon store, depending on where you live. So obviously in Australia, it's amazon.com.au, and you can search for the book under Hammy and the Moken's Magic Potion. I think Hammy and the will probably bring it up. Yeah, authors Marion Halliday and Peter Stain.
And there's also Hammy website.
Yes, Hammy has his own website at hammybooks.com. All one word, Hammy, Hammie, Hammiebooks.com.
And there's lots of other things that are actually on the website as well. Activities and...
Yeah, there's plenty of interesting things there on the website. You can have a look at some sample pages if you're not sure what the book might look like. You can actually see some of those on Amazon as well. There's a little bit of the history of the story, how it came to be. And if you're interested as a parent or a teacher in what the messages might be in the book, you can see some of that there as well. There's activities for kids, especially people who've read the book. There's a bit of character analysis. There's other interesting things outside the book, conversations between some of the characters that you might want to listen to. And there's also some illustrations of all the characters so you can see what they look like. As a bit of a teaser, I guess, visit the website first if you want to have a look and see what the book might look and feel like. And if you're interested in purchasing it, amazon.com or amazon.com.au for if you're listening from anywhere else, look at your local Amazon store.
Okay, thank you very much, Marianne, for coming today and talking about your writing journey and your latest book, which is...
Hammy and the Moken's Magic Potion.
And thank everyone for listening. And don't forget to listen in again for how Marianne actually writes and how she works collaboratively with another author, particularly in a long-distance relationship between authors, on further episodes of the podcast. Thank you for listening.
Thanks very much for having me.